It's the True Faith Podcast. I'm Alex Hurst, joined today by Simon Campbell, as always, and by Daily Mail journalist Craig Hope. Craig, thanks so much for joining me once again.
No problem.
Great to speak to you. The podcast that we did with you in the summer was incredibly successful and well listened to, so more of the same, please.
Yeah, this has been still number one, I believe, out of all the Northeast journalists you've done, so we've got,
Absolutely. That's something for the lads to aspire to one day. I'll start off, Craig, by talking a little bit about the things that you mentioned last time we spoke, to see if anything has changed, and we'll talk a little bit about how it's been for you, the championship under Benitez as a journalist who concentrates predominantly on the Premier League. So last time you spoke to us, you said that last season Newcastle was no fun to cover, and that the media, other people who controlled the media outputs, didn't want to play the game with you yourself. You got banned, and also other journalists. Have things changed? And if they have, why do you think that is?
Because they've realised they were wrong. Yeah, they have changed, definitely. And that has come from... It took relegation for Newcastle United to realise an awful lot in terms of how they... At all levels of the football club, from the press to media to marketing to ticketing to playing staff to everything, it took relegation to press reset. So I think we can now, at the start of the season, I think we posed the question, didn't we, was relegation a good thing for Newcastle United? And I think tentatively I said, well yes, I think it is, I think it will be, I think it should be. I think we can sit here now 6 months on and say, absolutely, for me, I think it's no longer a dirty secret on Tyneside that this football club absolutely needed relegation. To answer your question, Alex, in terms of press relations, yeah, it's been better. Listen, I can ring up now and say I fancy speaking to Daryl Murphy or Christian Atsu or Matt Ritchie or Dwight Gayle, and they'll say, right, no problem, we'll go away and ask the boys. Last year, we didn't have any of that. It was very much an us and them. We were the enemy. And I said this to... We had a meeting with the powers that be in Newcastle a few months back, and I said, you know, last season, I said, if you treat us like the enemy, we will behave like the enemy. And you don't want to make an enemy of journalists, especially not journalists who've got good contacts at the football club as well. And what you found last season was a lot of bad news stories coming out. Now, that wasn't me shit-stirring or deliberately causing trouble. It was because the more I dug, the deeper I went, the more I realised how many bad news stories were there. In the end, it drove this wedge between myself and the football club. And ultimately, I was banned at various junctures. It just created this horrible, toxic atmosphere. And I always say sort of bad energy breeds bad energy. And you had players fighting with players. There was just this whole environment and this whole atmosphere of mistrust. And it was awful. Now, this season, they've sort of relaxed everything towards the press. You know, they're giving you the word a little off the record. Yeah, you're allowed to speak to the players. Rafa's brilliant. Rafa will talk to you on the record, off the record. And everything is just the way it should be. Now, listen, that doesn't mean I'm not doing my job and I'm not away there looking for these so-called bad news stories which exist. I want to break all stories. I want to tell supporters the truth. And there are still some tales like that out there. But certainly now they've realised that, listen, treat the press as the baddies, the latter as the baddies. And I think we got that wrong with me personally, massively. This year, listen, it's been far easier to cover and far more enjoyable. It was the winning football matches at the end of the day. So no, to answer your question, Alex, it has been better. I think they've got the press side of things right. But the big question is when they go back up, and they will go back up, they've got to take that into the Premier League.
Do you think that's all come from the manager? Do you think that the media people themselves, in terms of whether it comes right from the very top, or whether you're head of media and Wendy Taylor and Lee Marshall and stuff, do you think that they've been as important as Rafa, or do you think that Rafa kind of took one look at the toxic situation you inherited last season and thought, come on, let's sort this out?
No, I think without Rafa, I don't think this happens. And that's not a reflection of the guys in the media department. I think they were as frustrated as anybody at times last year, and they've obviously got to answer to their peer masters in terms of what the media policy is. And I think they're mighty relieved that Rafa has come in and insisted that the media policy does change. But to go back to my point, without Rafa, it doesn't change. Rafa Benitez is the guy who's taken one look at this and thought, bloody hell, come on. You know, why are we treating these guys with such disdain and so antagonising us almost? You know, just little things like the food in the press box, which never goes down well with supporters. We think, well, why should you bloody be fed? But just little things like that. It was needlessly antagonising us as a press body, the preferred media partner, everything like that. Just didn't create an atmosphere which boded well for positive coverage and for the two sort of the two entities getting on. So, but no, it is because of Rafa. Absolutely, he's not daft. Rafa, listen, he's managed at Real Madrid, he's managed at Liverpool, he's managed it at not bigger clubs than Newcastle United, but clubs whereby you need everything to be working in unison to give yourself the best chance. And you just thought, you know what, if we've got the pressing side, we have a better chance, everyone together going forward. And no, it is because of him that things have changed. And so far, you know, touch wood, so far, so good. But the test will come next year back in the Premier League.
How do you think Rafa at Newcastle has been perceived at a national level? Because obviously you still, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a lot of stuff I see, right, it's predominantly about Sunderland and Middlesbrough.
Yeah, yeah.
As a result, is it very much of a case of your colleagues at the Daily Mail are kind of, well, let's look at them next season, the Championship, or has there been a little bit more interest than there normally would be for a Championship club?
At the start of the season, when you're Newcastle were losing games, they were a huge story. That national desk were clapping their hand, brilliant, getting beat every week. So that's just the way it is. Listen, yeah. In journalism, you work in extremes. The last club you ever want to cover is Stoke or West Brom, where you're 11th or 12th. No one gives a fuck, basically. If you've got Newcastle United in there, they're either winning games or they're losing games. So we had that little spell before Christmas, didn't we, when Newcastle went on that brilliant run and almost they were equaling club records, weren't they? They were a story then, because my desk in London were ringing me, it's the Rafa Lucian, what's it all about? We want the inside story, what's he changed in the dressing room, what's he changed in the canteen, in the medical room, with the press, everything. So we got a good hit then, we got a good hit at the start of the season. January was good because there was very clearly all was not well behind the scenes. We'll probably touch on that a little bit more later on. So yeah, it's sort of been peaks and troughs with Newcastle this season, even though they've been up there for the entirety of the campaign at the top of the Championship. In terms of national interest, it'll peak every now and again when there's something really good or there's something really bad, or the John Joe Shelby affair or this, that and the other. But yeah, the interest is still there. We're trying to treat them as the 21st Premier League club. That was the intention at the start of the season, but you've almost seen in the Premier League now, in terms of national coverage, there's not really a great deal outside of the top six and then the one or two crisis clubs at the bottom. So yeah, I think they've had a good hit. They've certainly had more coverage than a Brighton or a Sheffield or a Leeds. Absolutely. I've got some great interviews in the paper, big full pages with the likes of Dwight Gale and Matt Ritchie and so on. So yeah, that interest is there. But certainly when they come back up next year, we're after in the Premier League. It'll be huge again, definitely.
You talked about the players there that you've had the chance to interview. Do you think that this is going to be sound a bit silly, because obviously they're good football players and had good football players at the club before that just maybe were mismanaged or missigned for the wrong reasons. Do you think, from your interviews with those lads, do you think they're better people? I know that's a bit harsher than the people who were here before, but say Matt Ritchie, for example, I mean, it was a surprise to a lot of people that he left Bournemouth. I know you could talk about the respective size of the two clubs, but at the end of the day, Premier League guaranteed, Bournemouth done well to drop down to Newcastle. Do you think that Rafa's signings have been good for the football club as a whole?
I do, yeah. And listen, when I sit down and do these interviews, I don't know if you've read them, but the one thing I get away from is I don't want to know who you played on Saturday. I don't want to know about momentum. I don't want to know about the comeback last weekend. I sit down opposite these lads. I said the same to both Matt and Dwight. I said, I want to get to know about you as a person. I said, I want to tell the story of the person behind the player. And if you remember the Dwight interview, was great. They both enjoyed it. They really opened up, Dwight especially, about working in the City of London as a carpenter. He was 21-year-old, sprinting through the commuters to get to Liverpool Street to get his train, back out to Essex to play in front of like a man and his dog. And if he got the winner, the guy would give him a fiver. So that was my only wage. If I got the winning goal, we had this nut in the stand. They followed us everywhere. I used to pay the match winner. And those are nice stories to tell. And what you realise is that Rafa signed human beings, he signed proper people. Matt Ritchie as well, just absolutely loved talking about his son and singing the Matt Ritchie's Magic Son to his little boy Harry around the house and telling stories about first coming through with Dagenham and Redbridge and living above a pub. And it was like, hell, I meant to be a professional footballer. And it's just nice to get those things. The two things I walked away from sitting down with those guys was, you know what? Deep down, you're good lads. You just love playing football and you want to win and you want the very best for yourself. Now, in the past, we don't have to name names, do we? We had a few who weren't really interested in that. It was all about sort of, we're using Newcastle as a stepping stone to get somewhere else. And we're more bothered about the bank balance than there were the points tally. I think we don't really name any names, but these guys there now, I think they are fostering a bit of a team spirit. I don't think it's yet the level of 2009-10 where you had really good Kevin Nolan, Nicky Conan Smith. We know all about that era and what happened there, but nonetheless, I do think there's some good guys in there. Kieran Clark, Matt Ritchie, Dwight Gale. I think John Joe Shelby's got his flaws, but I do think he is a good sort of British lad who does ultimately love playing football. So now I think Rafa is building a better squad than certainly we've had in recent years in terms of character, determination, and just being good blokes, basically, if you'd want to have a pint with.
John Joe Shelby's an interesting one because he started the season out of the team, which, I mean, it's, I don't know how you feel, because you cover football for a living, but as fans, we go to a lot of the games, obviously, we record for you people listening now, right, a lot for True Faith, so to say. It's been an utterly exhausting season in terms of the number of games, the turnarounds, all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, you think back to Fulham in August, it seems like a different lifetime. Yeah. And, you know, I was at that game and Shelby wasn't, it was no surprise Shelby didn't start. He wasn't in the first team picture. And then you look at Huddersfield, Brighton to an extent. Huddersfield, Rafa's got him playing as a defensive midfielder, sweeping up, making tackles in front of the back four. Do you think that's been a success story of the season? The fact that Rafa's managed to reintegrate a talent like Shelby when it looked like start of the season he was possibly not in his plans.
We can go back further than that. We can go back to the end of last season when you've got a £12 million footballer who's been at the football club for, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and he had this tremendous start. And Rafa comes in and identifies him as someone whose head's not in the right place and drops him for really key matches in that relegation running. There was a little bit of a hangover of that at the start of this season, of course, but I think he had a bit of a light bulb moment during the summer. He came back, he had a personal trainer working with him pretty much every day before the rest of the guys even came back, and I think it took them a little bit of a while of this season for that to show itself. But listen, he's been tremendous. I think he's been Newcastle's best player. And when he's in the side, I always feel a little bit more confident that you've got a standard bearer there, somebody who will drag others up to his standard of trying to get hold of the game and trying to dictate things. And absolutely, you made the point, is it one of the success stories of the season? I think without John Joe Shelby and the form he's been, the way he's been driving the team forward up the pitch, and just his racism thing aside, his whole mentality and his whole will to win and get the best out of himself this year, I think he's probably been Newcastle's arguably player of the season. You've got the likes of Matt Ritchie and Dwight Gale competing with him, and Kieran Clark for different reasons as well. But certainly Shelby's influence in the transformation of getting a player who seemed to be, he could have been a problem player. That's the big thing with John Joe Shelby. He could have been a real problem and a negative influence. Rafa's turned the negative into a positive. And for me, it's been very, very good management, clever management.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the squad now, and we'll go into the problems or perceived problems that Rafa had in January. Do you think that Rafa Benitez made good signings in the summer in terms of how the season has progressed, both in terms of the players, the Richies, the Gales, and maybe the lads who haven't featured as much?
He got some right, he got some wrong, didn't he? You know, I think that's fair to say. The ones he got right for me, I think Clark, Richie and Gale for what, a combined 27 million? Was it 12, 10 and 5? 27 million for those three players.
I think you've got to include Daryl Murphy as a positive. For what he cost and the contribution he's made already.
Oh, so 30 million for them four.
Well, just forget Murphy 1 second. I think he's a different type of sign. Those three, I think, are three signings who are good enough to take you up and be good enough to be Premier League players, is the point I've made. So I'd say those are three tremendous signings. I'd say Daryl Murphy is a good signing in terms of, it was a situation signing. He bought him for a purpose, he bought him for a reason. We had that little run last month, didn't we, where he came in and did a job. I think we're now going to see something similar, certainly at the weekend and over the next couple of games, something similar with that as Dwight Gale feels his way back to fitness. So he probably got more right than he got wrong. The others who came in, Hanley's done okay, he's done a job. There's been one or two probably weren't good enough for the likes of Lazar and Jesus Gamas. Chris Inatsu has been okay, he's done all right, hasn't he? So there's been three or four good, three or four okay, two or three not so good. But when you sign in 10 or 11 players, there's always going to be that ratio for me.
So the story in January, I mean, you can disprove and knock some of these down if you want before we talk about the big problem, was that At that point to you, it was reported that Mike Ashley thought Newcastle should have been making easier work of the division, and that Benitez had wasted money by ignoring Graham Carr's advice on some of the players you've mentioned there. How was there any truth in either of those allegations?
I think Mike did think they should have been doing slightly better. Definitely. I also think he thought that Rafa had enough and had been given enough to get out of the division without the need for investing in January. Rafa's point was, quite understandably, right, okay, but if I think we need one player for the sake of 12 to 15 million, which is what it was going to cost for Andros Townsend, why not bring him in just to see us over the line, especially as it would be a signing which will then be good enough to take us up into the Premier League and stay as part of the squad. I sided with Rafa on this massively in terms of my own judgment, stepping back as a journalist, surveying all of the evidence there. I thought, why not say Andros Townsend? Listen, come on, it's a player who had for some reason hit upon something what worked for him at Newcastle. Didn't really work for him at Tottenham. Crystal Palace subsequently didn't do very well, which is why he was available and why he wanted to come. Just bring him back, just give Rafa what he wants. At the end of the day, it's Rafa Benitez. You know what I mean? You've got a manager there who has sorted the club out in the space of 6 months, has transformed so many levels of the football club. Just give him what he wants. Don't risk upsetting the apple cart for the sake of either a point of principle or the sake of a few million pounds with Crystal Palace. So no, for me, I mean, listen, you guys all read the stories there towards the end of the window that Rafa wasn't happy, that he wasn't happy, that he could quit in the summer. Listen, he still could go. If whether you choose to believe us as journalists or not, that's up to you guys at the end of the day. But listen, I'm telling you, there's still a little bit of legs left in this story yet. That I think Rafa's thought, okay, put it to bed for now and we'll see where we are. When we finish promotion first and foremost, get that out of the way, then we'll revisit the issues of Graham Carr, the issues of finance, the issues of who he's got the final say, control, the level of target that the football club wants to identify and wants to go for, what the ambition is for next season. For now, believe me, trust me, they are all unanswered questions, absolutely. So to that end, there's still a little bit of legs left in this story in terms of will or will not Rafa Benitez be in charge next season.
11 points clear, sat here talking before Reading tonight. Obviously, Huddersfield could win and they'll have a game in hand. We could lose and it's 5 points, but if you look at the games we've got coming up, particularly against lesser teams, you'd think now Newcastle are home and dry. How quickly do you think the club will be willing to solve this in the summer? Because the last thing, presumably, they want, with season tickets going on sale and that kind of stuff, is another massive summer of discontent. And I and other people were kind of praised the club in the summer because as soon as that last ball was kicked against Spurs, they sat down with Rafa allegedly for 2 weeks and we got sorted. We're in the middle of May, right, we're done, we know what's happening next season. Can you see something happening like that this time, or is there far more politics involved?
Listen, once it's looking as if Newcastle will be as good as promoted, I think those conversations will certainly be taking place in terms of the elements I mentioned there before. Control, what happens to Graham Carr, still a little bit of an issue with the club. Finance, ambition, all the rest of it. And what they've got to do is, and what Rafa will want to do, they've already started, we've spoken to them, they've already started identifying targets, they've already started to draw up lists in terms of different scenarios, different ages, different positions. He'll want to be ready to go on the beat of the band once they go into the summer. If you look at two of the signings they had done relatively early last year, Matt Ritchie and Dwight Gayle, they got them really before the new TV money prices kicked in. If you bought Matt Ritchie for me 2 months down the line at the end of August, you might have been a £20 million player. Dwight Gayle might have been a £15 million player. So I think Rafa, again, will look at that and think, if you get your business done early, you avoid having you avoid getting caught up in the summer inflation. It does happen, prices snowball as the summer goes on. So you want to get that business done early. I think you mentioned there, Alex, and I think they will go up. I think the past week I was down in Brighton. That goal, as hilarious as it was, just had the feel of an absolutely season-defining moment. It really did. We will look back on the end of the season at that and one laugh, and two, look back and think that was the moment which just really, when things were in the balance, just tipped it in Newcastle's favour. I really do hope that Mike Ashley sees the reaction of supporters as to what was reported at the end of January and just says, listen, Rafa, you're the gaffer, you tell us what you want and how we're going to play it, and let's go.
We've got a few things planned with Gallagher Flags to get the message across.
I wanted to go because as a group of fans, we want to believe that there's not too much going on behind the scenes, because we want to believe that Rafa's going to stay and nothing so ridiculous has happened that he's really considering leaving. But for me, the Crystal Palace side of the Andros Townsend deal, like, he was playing every week for Palace. It's Sam Allardyce, who we know has got a bit of history with Rafa. Was the deal always on the cards from their end? Was it a case of he's there for the taking, or was there more, were they messing us around a bit? I kind of want to believe that there was more to it.
You know what? I thought I knew the truth. I really did. During the entire of the transfer window, everything I was hearing was Townsend wants to come. The deal is in place. Rafa certainly thought it was. And you know, Rafa's the manager. He thought it was all good to go there. Since the window's closed, I've heard that Palace were perhaps just stringing Newcastle along all along. And that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever, as you touched on their side, that Pevis Allardyce and Palace was getting a little bit of a kick out of it, stringing Newcastle along all along. So the truth as ever with these things probably exists somewhere in between. But certainly, Rafa's angst and Rafa's frustration come from a very definite belief that he thought the Townsend deal could be done if the powers of be in Newcastle United said, OK, let's go for it.
And the bigger one was that he didn't seem to know what had happened. That was what concerned everyone. That's what came through in the interviews he did after the QPR game. Was that he didn't know what had happened. He didn't know why it had happened. So that was...
Yeah, I think that's what he was... It was one of those answers where don't know, something says, oh, I don't know. It was a very, very loaded don't know. Yeah. It was almost a don't ask me, I don't know. Go away and ask somebody else. They're the ones who messed it up, sort of thing. But no, he certainly wasn't happy in that first press conference after the transfer window. That much was clear.
Where do you think this leaves Lee Charnley? Because particularly in the summer, in September, Rafa is massively almost, I've never heard a manager big up an MD before, but Rafa was constantly saying, me and Lee, I tell Lee does this, me and Lee work really well together. Has that relationship fractured perhaps a little bit because of January?
I don't think so. No, I always think Lee Charnley's in a difficult position because he's caught between who does he work for? Does he work for the manager? Is that his priority in handling Rafa Benitez's sort of wants and wishes? Or does he work for Mike Ashley in handling his wants and wishes? So it's a very difficult role he's got. I think Lee has realised on a lot of levels the mistakes which were made last season. He's made every effort to repair those. And I think he would have hated January. I think he would have thought, oh no, not again. Please don't put me between a rock and a hard place, for want of a better phrase. I don't think that relationship would have been fractured. No, I think Rafa sees Lee as his man, as his sort of avenue to get those sorts of messages to Mike Ashley. There may be trouble ahead on in that respect, in terms of going back to the question I just posed there, who does Lee Charnley actually work for and who's the answer to? Well, ultimately, it's probably Mike Ashley. So if Mike Ashley in the summer says Rafa's getting F all in Graham Carr's still in charge of identifying targets, and we'll sign who I want to sign, we'll sign players under 24, they're still on value, and that puts Lee in a very difficult position. So that one for now is probably still be determined going forward, I would say. But I think the relationship for now certainly isn't fractured, definitely not.
Changing tacks a little bit, one player who divides fan opinion like no one else I can remember, anyway, my short period supporting Newcastle relatively, is Alexander Mitrovic. Can you give us anything kind of that you've picked up from chats with players or people within the club about why, for example, Newcastle played two massive away games, three tonight against Reading, he'll play no minutes in any of those games. What's going on with him?
Listen, this probably doesn't take journalist insight to reveal that Rafa probably doesn't fancy him, does he? I don't think he fancies him as a player or necessarily a character either. I think his time at the club is pretty much as good as up now. As long as Rafa stays here, I think Mitrovic will move on in the summer. When you've got a £12 million signing there and you're choosing to play 33-year-old Daryl Murphy in front of him, that's no disrespect to Daryl Murphy. I think he's coming in.
Or even Gouffran.
And he's done fantastically well. But Mitrovic was always a gamble. If you go back to when they first signed him two summers ago, I don't know if I told you this story in the last podcast, I'll tell you it again. I went out to Brussels, it was a quiet summer, there wasn't a great deal going on, but signed this guy Mitrovic, on the verge of signing him, and I thought he looked like a bit of a character. It was quiet summer. I got the train, got the Eurostar over to Brussels, went to an Anderlecht game, a pre-season friend against Lazio. I spoke to his former teammates, I spoke to the manager, I spoke to journalists there. I went in the pub outside the ground, spoke to the barman, who Alex managed to go in all the time and meet his family for coffee after the games. I got so much background information on him. And the picture which was painted was Newcastle was signing a fucking lunatic, basically. And the headline in the Daily Mail was, what was it? It was, a five-year-old trapped in a monster's body, and the club went off it. The club saw the headline. You haven't given the, you've written this guy off before he's even kicked a ball. Give him a bloody chance. You're causing trouble. You're shit stirring. It was at the time I was on the verge of being banned and not banned. In fact, I was banned, yeah. And yeah, the club didn't like it at all. The club weren't happy. We were causing trouble for no reason. I thought, right, okay. Listen, I've gone out there. All I've done as a journalist is ask questions. And this is what I've got back. And there's a load of anecdotes about him being overweight, about him. Just so much. And I thought, I've got to write the story as I'm told it. Comes to his home debut against Arsenal, he's sent off after 11 minutes. I turned that little look towards the director's box and thought, where's that fucking story now? it just showed him. But on the back of that, I thought, well, if I was in Brussels asking all these questions, where was the club scout on my shoulder doing background checks on Alexander Mitrovic as a character? Where were they? You know, by the time the story appeared in the Daily Mail, it was too late. He'd signed a five-year deal with joint for 12 million quid, but you know, they got that one massively wrong in terms of character. There's little bits to like about him as a player, but it's not as if he's signing a tremendous talent who is flawed. He's an okay player with a questionable character, and the reason supporters love him is because he's got the cult hero element to him. He is a daft lad. There's something to love and there's something to like about him. There's not enough Alexander Mitrovic is in the modern game, definitely not in terms of some of the characteristics he does bring, but ultimately you've got to be worth it as a player, and he's probably not worth it as a player for that side of things. So now I fully expect him to move on in the summer, but it's been fun, hasn't it? Listen, he's given us something to write about during the past couple of seasons. I mean to you guys, are you a yes or a no man?
Oh, absolutely not.
We're a strong no, but you're right. He's given us so many podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, the debate on Twitter is we'll record all our Mitrovic. Even people who listen and who will be listening to this now who like the podcast take massive objection. It just seems like, this is such a harsh thing to say, but I think people who go to games as much as we do, and like you said, you don't have to be a football journalist to realise that his performances against Blackburn at home, Bristol the other week, The management team just must be looking at that thing, and Dwight Gayle and Johan Gufan and Dominic was so much more from a, if the ball comes into the box and someone's got a free header, who do I back? Probably Alexander Mitrovic. How often does that happen? Very rarely.
The point you make, Alex, I'll say this, right? What I like about Dwight Gayle is he's a striker who misses chances. And by that I mean good strikers get chances. Yeah. They miss half and they score half. Alexander Mitrovic didn't even miss chances.
No, he doesn't.
You know what I mean? He doesn't get chances. He doesn't get chances. Yeah. Good strikers get chances. The very best strikers, your Shearers, your Henrys, they get chances and they score the majority of them. Someone like Dwight Gayle, he scores 1 in 2. That's okay. That's all right. At least the guy, when he puts one wide from 6 yards, he'll come back 10 minutes later for the next one and he'll put it in the back of the net. So, for me, I think Dwight Gayle's been a brilliant signing. I think he's put Mitrovic to shame, really, in terms of what he's brought to the party this season and going forward. I think Dwight Gayle could be a Premier League striker, but I wouldn't expect to see Mitrovic at the club next year.
And where do you see, I suppose we'll have to finish off soon, but where do you see, or what do you, if you might have spoken to him yourself, what does Rafa Benitez say is a good season for Newcastle next year? Because the presumption from our part is he's not just going to be looking to finish 17th.
Definitely not. No, he doesn't want to go up in the remit to be survival. Absolutely not. Now, he might accept the remit, which is a top-10 finish, and then build from there. And I think supporters would be happy to subscribe to that. And I think Rafa would as well. But listen, Newcastle aren't going up there to exist as a for the benefit of Mike Ashley's balance book and just to feed off the cash cow that is the Premier League. And how depressing would that be? Just when you've hit upon a manager who's got ambition which exceeds what he previously got for 5 years under Alan Pardew and the fifth place finisher part, of course. But no, I think next year, Rafa, he'll rip it up. Okay, we'll keep him, we'll build a team around the nucleus of the team that got promoted. Rafa will say, if you're not good enough, you're gone. It will be the Gavin Peacock, the David Kelly scenario, which Kevin Keegan adopted 25 years ago, whereby he'd be more than happy to say goodbye to players who have given him a good year's service this time round. For me, I think I touched on it earlier, I think starters in the Premier League next year could be Clark, Richie, Shelby, Gayle as a sort of, perhaps in a rotation with somebody just as good or a little bit better. After that, I think the rest are perhaps playing for either squad places or will be looking elsewhere. So there's still a lot to be determined in that respect. I think a lot hinges on summer recruitment. in terms of Mike Ashley's ambition, in terms of Rafa's ability to bring in the players he wants and the players the club needs to take that next level. But everything there is set up to achieve that next level. Listen, if Newcastle grew up with Rafa Benitez as manager, there's no reason why you can't return a top 10 finish and then build from there the season after. Let's just hope that a certain Mr. Ashley doesn't mess everything up between now and then, because that is the big unanswered question, and there still are one or two little things rumbling behind the scenes there that make me as a journalist and as a supporter of all the North East clubs still a little bit uneasy, because we want to see our teams do well, and certainly Newcastle United is the one club up here who's got the potential to be something special and something fantastic, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think that's just about done it for today, Si, unless you think I've missed out.
Fingers crossed, ended up. We don't know.
Newcastle's in a good position. It's been a good season. I think it's probably gone as well as can be expected. This past week has been absolutely huge. But one thing I would say to supporters is don't be fooled just yet into thinking everything is absolutely rosy in the garden. It's not. There's still a little way to go behind the scenes in terms of getting the club where it needs to be for me going forward next season.
But it can happen.
It can happen and it should happen, but it won't necessarily definitely happen. Newcastle United, bloody hell, come on.
Yeah. Greg, thanks so much for joining me. We'll hopefully speak to you again.
No problem at all, lads.